So let's start with Bach and talk about Bach. I mean, much has been made throughout your career that you began, you know, your discography with Bach. You were still a teenager. You took on these incredibly challenging, you know, partitas and sonatas. But this is sort of the sequel to all of that.
It's a sequel, and it's also closing a loop. I've been doing solo Bach for most of my performing life. I learned my first two movements of solo Bach, the Siciliano and Presto from Sonata No. 1, which is on the album. I learned those from my first full recital when I was 10, so I started preparing for that when I was 9. And as a result, I've been playing this solo repertoire, adding to it and revisiting it for close to 20 years now. 30 years. Sorry. Yeah. Close to 30 years.
Time flies.
And that's how long, yeah, that's how long it's been in my life. And I didn't even realize that I was also inundated with Bach as a much younger child, because my dad took piano lessons at one point and he was working on one of the two-part inventions. And I didn't even realize that it was Bach. It was just a two-part invention. That's the title that I knew. When I then started taking piano lessons, I learned the same one. So I just had Bach in my head all along. He also used to sing in choirs, and so we would listen to recordings of the B minor mass and the vocal works at home. I just think that Bach's music is so wide-ranging, it covers so many emotions, and these particular pieces, the solo sonatas and partitas, they're polyphonic. They have these different voices, different lines you can follow. It's almost like when you look at a painting, then you notice that there are in the, maybe the painter painted a tree, and in the bark of the tree there are animals that are hidden, and then in the leaves there are shapes that are hidden. It's all those different layers that show up in his writing for solo instruments. And in the violin works, it's particularly poignant because often he has different voices on different strings, and so you can kind of trace it as a performer, can trace what he's doing where, and use the different timbres of the violin to bring out the expressive aspect of this particular writing technique. The emotions are really quite varied. I find it meditative to play the music because it just draws me into its own flow of expression. And I feel like for the audience as well, no matter what the circumstance or what the space I'm playing in, somehow the Bach changes a room. It draws people in. It also allows them to have their own space when listening, to explore their own thoughts and their own reactions. I don't know how he did it, but it's pretty miraculous.
Yeah, and it's interesting the way you describe it, the fact that it's not programmatic in any sense, so he's not telling people what they should be thinking about when they're listening to it. What are you thinking about when you're playing it? What does solo Bach violin music evoke in you?
Well, for a performer, when you look at the score, he doesn't actually tell you much about what to do in the score either. He doesn't tell the listener how to listen, and he doesn't really give many directions as far as tempo. I mean, there might be one word at the beginning of a movement to tell you basically what kind of a speed to play, like presto, or it might be a stylistic word like Siciliana, which tells you it's styled after a dance. And so you kind of try to figure out how you relate to that dance format in that music. And there are only a couple of places where a movement is a section of a piece, so a couple of movements where he indicated whether he wanted forte, loud, or piano soft. So it's really, really up to the player to decide pretty much everything, from whether you hold the volume of a note or whether you fade it. Whether you do a crescendo or a decrescendo, whether it's a peak of the drama or whether it's the valley of the drama. And it's really so up to the performer, I think it becomes intimidating. You could do everything, and so when you can do everything, you almost are tempted to freeze up and do nothing. Mm-hmm. But having played these pieces for so long, I've done them so many different ways, I feel like I have a pretty clear picture of where one decision in the moment can lead. So I might decide I want to highlight the top line of the music, the high notes, and then I know where they go. It doesn't throw me off to suddenly decide, oh, I'm going to go in this direction with these notes. I think what he wrote in the score is all relative, and you can interpret it many, many different ways. And I think that all of them have validity, but you have to have a certain conviction and a certain inner peace with the direction you're taking the music, or else it's unsettling for the listener.
You talk about the music of Bach in such emotional terms, but also there's a lot of technical stuff going on there. And I'm wondering, is your approach more intuitive for you, or do you think consciously about the technical challenges of the piece as you go into it?
I like to chip away at the technique. I also think that by now it's pretty intuitive. I can think about a concept of technique, like maybe I want to... But for me, the technique is connected to the musicality. So I'll think I want to hold the long notes longer and play the fast notes faster. It's a very basic approach, a very basic way to change how you do something. And that is somewhat technical, because if you're going to hold a note longer, you have to do it differently with the bow. You have to save your speed on the bow so that you can sustain the note. And then if you're going to play the fast notes faster, you have to be ready to play the virtuosic stuff faster. But really, it's about, if I do something that way, if I do play a slow movement with that idea in mind, then really what winds up happening is it sounds a lot more free rhythmically. It sounds much more improvisatory, melismatic. So it's really a combination. I've always been taught to look at technique as an enhancement of the music. You use technique for the service of the musical communication. And ideally, the technique doesn't become the focus. Ideally, the technique supports the emotion.
Yeah, very well stated. I can tell that you've done a lot of interviewing yourself.
I've done a lot of thinking. When you practice, you have a lot of time to think.
Well, I like your interview series that you have on YouTube.
Thanks.
Because you've interviewed such a wide variety. Everybody from another Hilary Hahn to a fish. I love your fish interview, by the way.
Yeah, I like, actually, when I get a chance to interview people or fish that I spend time with, because I feel like when you talk to someone in the course of normal interactions, when you're working together, when you're just crossing paths, you talk about certain things and you make certain assumptions about them and about what they're thinking, how they approach things. But then if you actually have a format where you are directly asking questions, you learn more about the person, even if you think that you knew everything that you needed to know. They frame it a little bit differently. So I find it really interesting to talk with people in those different contexts.
Well, I usually ask violinists to talk a little bit about their violin, but I think in your case, literally, the violin case seems to get more attention than the violin. And I read an interview with you not too long ago where you talk about your violin case, which has its own social media accounts. But
on Instagram and Twitter.
You say it's a portable office. What do you keep in your violin case besides a violin?
Well, the violin case, it supports the violin in a sense. So it has strings and rosin and all of the little tiny tools needed to maintain things that I can maintain on my violin, and also a shoulder rest, because I play with a shoulder rest. It's the thing that clamps onto the back of the violin to fill the space between your chin and your shoulder. And what else? Music. I always have my earrings and necklaces in there, because the violin case is a pretty protected place for things to be, and those don't take up a lot of space. So I keep those in the outer pocket. And anything essential.
Well, if folks want to engage with your violin case, they can do that on Instagram and Twitter. It's @violincase. Great way to remember that. and if folks want to learn more about you, they can just go to your website, right? HilaryHahn.com.
That's true.
Yeah, a lot of great stuff there, including fan art, which I think is a great thing to kind of browse through and look at all the different pictures of you that have been drawn by, I'm assuming, folks of varying ages.
Yes, that's something that people just started doing on their own, and then I started seeing an opportunity to collect them and feature them. So also on Facebook, Facebook/Hillary Hahn, we have a feature there with featuring fan art every Friday. So it's nice to be able to kind of be reminded of all of the things people have so generously given and shared with their creative process. I really love finding out about people's creativity, and this is a really nice way for me to see how the fans and concert goers also engage in creativity in their spare time.
No, that's wonderful. Well, and you're certainly giving back in the form of your own music, and have been for a long time. This album is forthcoming from Decca Classics. Hillary Hahn plays Bach, Sonatas 1 and 2, and the Partita Number 1. Hillary, thanks so much for speaking with us here on FM 91.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.